All right, 1 Samuel chapter 7, story of David and Goliath. I think this is probably true for many of us, that we've grown up with some awareness of this story from our childhood. Would that be true? When you think about your childhood perspective, what was kind of your perspective or your impressions when you heard this story, the account of David and Goliath? How did you react to it? How did it impress you?
Sort of like a hero.
Hero, oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a small child, and I heard it as a small child, as far as a slingshot, I didn't even know what a slingshot was. But, you know, when you can think about somebody taking a slingshot, and with a small pebble, hitting somebody in the forehead and wasting them out, you know, I mean, that's like Superman.
Yeah. Yeah, hero, that word does come. And David certainly was treated like one afterwards, at least by the major population. Very good. What else?
It was like my first experience as a child seeing an underdog type of story.
Ah, the underdog angle, yes. Yeah.
That was.
Well, and you talk about giant. Now, David may well have been a late teenager, early adult. I mean, we tend to think I was thinking like 11-year-old against, you know, single combat warrior robo guy here, you know, and it was a total mismatch. Yeah, good. What else? Good. I hadn't thought about it, but good. Did it seem real, or is it just like a fairy tale, like you hear about, you know, knights in shining armor?
No, I've long. Long, put all that stuff out of my mind.
Okay, good.
Anything with God's involved.
You might have put it out long before some of us, but yeah, it's true, yeah. Yeah, certainly is real. Anything else?
I guess I realize as a kid, when God's on your side, you know, like you said, anything's happening, anything is possible, you're going to win.
Yeah. So. Well, you have hit what I'm afraid many people miss. A lot of times I think we do take these angles of the underdog or the surprise victory or just how a little thing could bring down the big guy or the hero. But that is, and you've really hit the underpinnings of what we want to talk about. It is what makes the difference was he didn't have superior aim or superior weaponry or good luck was shining on him. None of that. He was there doing God's business. And that's one of the reasons we want to break this into two parts. Because we really want to get the background. I mean, the exciting part is going on in the battle and the sling and all that, you know. But you've got to get the background. So if you go to the first few verses of this chapter, that's what we want to look at. We want to look at this his view of God, his confidence in God, his connection to the promises of God, which moves him forward. Now, the first 11 verses detail just the background, okay? And it says in verse 1, now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle, and they gathered together at Sochah, which belongs to Judah. Notice now they're in Israel territory. I mean, they have
encroached. Chapter 7?
17. I may have said 7. If I did, forgive me. Chapter 17. We were in chapter 7 a while back. So they're in Judah. They encamped and it gives the places and so forth, and they're gathered to battle. And then verse 3, they stood on one side, you know, opposing sides of the valley. Verse 4, and a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath. And now starts his description, okay? Whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Anyone want to do the
18 feet tall?
9 feet? What's that?
9 feet?
Yeah, probably 9, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, 6, 18 inches.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Right. If a cubit assumed to be about 18 inches. He was a big guy, okay?
Shaq Daddy.
He played for the NBA?
He certainly could have.
He was the NBA.
Okay.
A cubit is 18 inches, is that right?
Yeah. And the span's about, what, 7 or 8, something like that, 8, 9 inches, something like that. I guess a span is half a cubit, roughly. He had a bronze helmet on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of his coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, which was over 100 pounds of protective gear, okay? He had a bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Apparently that was, you know, reach back here and, you know, get it out, that sort of thing. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. and a shield bearer went before him. I mean, this guy, can we just say it? He was outfitted. He had everything he needed. Shield bearer just as a extra protection. And, verse 8, he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you servants of Saul, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. If I prevail against him and kill him, then you will be our servants and serve us." Now, doesn't that sound like a great conservation of resources? Rather than all of us dying on the battlefield, we'll just let two guys go out and battle it out, and whoever wins, that decides. I don't know if that would have ever worked, but this is going to be single combat warfare, okay? Just one combatant, and go out and do that. And the Philistine said, verse 9, and the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul, and that's the key here, and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They were just terrified, all right? So, based on their reaction, let's just start down the questions. What did the conventional wisdom say about the battlefield situation? Just roll out the odds. What's it look like?
You're going to get whooped.
They had this massive walking equivalent of a tank, a battleship, I don't know, guy. And then who do we have? And Saul, from top to bottom, they were terrified, okay? You get the sense when it says, and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Do you think the fear was contagious among this group? What do you think they were saying to each other? What would you imagine? You're in formation with your buddies on your right and your left, and you got a little dinky sword in your hand, and you look at this guy with this, come out and fight. What are you going to be whispering among your buddies?
That's four of them. That's four. Go get him.
Well, you would hope. I'm a little skeptical that there's too many who got brave enough to even say that.
Yeah.
But
well, that's three right behind you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You go first. That's probably true. We'll be right behind you. Way behind you. Yeah.
A treaty, people.
What?
About four people can try to get a treaty with this man.
No, make a treaty with
him.
Okay, maybe that's, why don't we try some diplomacy, okay?
Yeah.
Let's send in the Secretary of State for a roundtable discussion. Negotiate, yeah. I don't think Goliath was in a negotiating mode. Yes, sir.
I can tell you, being in World War II, it's not fun to step out first.
Oh, no. No. And you don't even have to be in a world war to figure that one out either. I think you can kind of sense what they were feeling, can't you?
I think Goliath loved to kill, too. He just loved it. He felt so strong when he was doing
it. He was basically a killing machine. That's what he did. And he was trained, he was equipped. He had a really bad attitude.
Probably made it slow. He wouldn't kill you right off. I figure he'd stick you in the arm and then cut off one of your legs.
There may be so.
Yeah, really?
Yeah,
I played with him probably.
Yeah, I don't think there was too much mercy. No, not at all. So, now, who's supposed to be leading this bunch of terrified soldiers?
Saul.
And notice the indictment, verse 11. And Saul and all Israel heard these words, they were dismayed. Well, when the leader's cowering in fear.
Of course, isn't this what you were saying from last week about Saul? He doesn't really get with the program.
That's a great description of Saul. That pretty much summarizes that. He didn't get with the program. Yeah, he just never seemed to be a person that operated on faith in God.
I was going through real fast. Where were they praying?
I think
if I was that bunch, I'd be doing some hard praying.
Hard praying, fasting, going before the Lord. Yeah, it's just they're sitting there paralyzed. And here comes Goliath out with his insults, and just casting them out. And I think probably the Philistines, across the valleys, here's the Philistine army. I think they're delighted with Goliath going out for his taunt and his ridicule. I think they were just loving the show. They were loving the spectacle of it all. All right, so Verse 12. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had eight sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. The three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to battle. The names of the three sons that went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn. Next to him was Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. So he has this lineup of eight sons. The oldest three are out at the battle. Four other brothers are back home, and then you have little baby brother David. Now, he was the youngest. He was not invited to be part of the army. We don't really know how old he was. He was young. I think he'd say that. I don't know. You'd have to assume he's a child. I don't think his father would have been sending him on this mission if he were a very young child. And basically, notice verse 16. And the Philistines drew near and presented the Philistine, that would be Goliath, drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. We're paralyzed for more than a month. Just, okay, here he comes again. Ah! Okay, verse 17. Then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers to the camp and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of the thousand and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. We've been waiting here for 40 days and nothing, we haven't got any word. Take some food. Take a care package to everybody. Make sure their captain gets his, get the cheeses, get those delivered. So David takes off and says in the middle of verse 20, he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. Now get this, is the part we usually don't think of. When he shows up, the army, okay, we're going to go. You know, we're going to chant, we're going to cheer. Let's all go! Ah! For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came to greet his brothers. Okay? Well, you want to see what's going on. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. He hears the same rant. And the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and they were dreadfully afraid. So, I mean, it's day 40. Okay, we're going to go today. Here we go. Yeah. Ah! Turn around, go back. And apparently this probably had happened. I mean, it's just, this is embarrassing. This is just embarrassing, okay? And then, not only is David have to go against what everybody else thinks, he's going to face an opposition. This is why I've entitled this, Things That Keep You Sidelined. There's always things in our lives that, whether it's fear or whether it's someone else's opinion or ridicule or criticism or whatever, there's plenty of things that will keep us on the sideline. And I just find it interesting how David works through this, okay? So when he sees this, he speaks up. So the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he's come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give him his father's house, exemption in Israel. How about that? You get wealthy, you get a wife, and you don't have to pay taxes for the rest of your life. Talk about sweetening the deal. But David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach of Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Does the clue phone kind of ring for you right there?
Somebody had some faith.
It took 27 verses.
Only one body seemed to have some faith, but you're exactly right.
Somebody.
Oh, okay, you said that.
Singular.
Okay, thank you.
It took 27 verses to finally God got into the story.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? And I wonder how many times in my life it's taken 27 whatevers before I allow God into the picture. I've done likewise. Yeah, it is. That's great. I mean, it is. They're defying not just you. We're the armies of the living God, not the idols that those people worship. And God had saved Israel more than once from oppressors and ungodly people that were living in fear. Now, and the people answered him in the same manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man who kills them. You kind of get the sense that maybe this repetition on David's part is I'm going to create some enthusiasm here. I want to create some faith. What's going to be done for the man? What's going to be done for the man? Verse 28. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard him when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart. You come down to see the battle." His motives are questioned by his own brother, aren't they? Any idea of why Eliab is so critical of his brother?
He's his brother.
He's embarrassed.
Well, he's his brother. That might be enough, yeah.
I think he's embarrassed that he won't go out there and his little brother's seeing him.
Yeah, yeah. I think it probably touched a nerve, don't you? Embarrassment, fear, you know. Hurting scared people, by the way, tend to be the people who can get really nasty. Mm-hmm. That's why we ought to operate in faith. It keeps you a lot more you're a lot more easy to get along with if you're operating in faith than if you are operating in fear. You really are. Yeah, I think he was trying to deflect from his own cowardice. Can we say it that way? His own lack of faith. Well, who do you think you are? The only reason you came down here, you wanted to see the show. And I love it. You know, you're tending those few sheep. You know, you have the most insignificant, pointless, bottom rung of the ladder, grungy, nasty job anyone could have. And we're soldiers. I mean, look, you know, it says right here on my uniform, soldier. You know, I mean, who are you? Look what he says. I love 29. And David said, "What have I done now? What have I done? Wait. I mean, he doesn't. I mean, I could think of, if Eliab was my brother, I could think of several other things I probably could have said to him at that point. But what have I done now? And then he goes right back to the big issue, as you were talking about, Brian. Is there not a cause? Don't you love that phrase? Is there not a cause? What does that say to you? What, that phrase, is there not a cause?
Don't I have reason to?
There's a reason. Reason to do this, yes. What else? Anyone want to add that? I'm going to kind of pull there and park. Thank you, John. Yeah. They did have reason. Is there not a cause? I suddenly got very quiet here in the old room.
Number four.
Okay.
You'll see where this has been an ongoing struggle between the two neighbors.
Yes.
It sounds like at one time the Philistines had the upper hand.
Yeah.
And they made some progress, and now it's in danger of being lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess could you help some of the, maybe not as good on our history. Was it Israelites just going through, or were they neighboring?
No, this was their land. This was the land they had occupied.
And,
the Philistines were invaders. That would be a way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, they weren't at this point traveling. You think of all the causes that people, and I know this might be a little bit of a slightly off of where he's going, but is there not a cause? Is there not a reason for us to speak up, to stand up, to step up, whatever?
Yeah.
You know, what is our cause? And there's all kind of good causes to be involved in. Many of them are very profitable and good and great thing. I remember a friend of mine who was a businessman down in Tennessee, quite successful with in his particular line of what he did, and he said, you know, and this was just his opinion. I'm not saying this is what you have to do or whatever, but I was challenged by this response. He said this. He said, you know, I get hit up as a businessman by everybody for every cause. You know, every, you know, disease, everything, every charity. And he said, they're all doing good things.
Yeah.
And he finally reached this conclusion. He said, I don't mean to sound callous or whatever, but he said, you know what? I'm a Christian. I know most unsaved people that have means aren't going to give to my cause. He said, you know, they're not going to give to a Christian ministry or whatever. He says, I've just dedicated everything I'm going to give, and I'm pretty sure he gave very generously. I'm going to give to Christian causes, to my church, to my, you know, because his view was there's a bigger pool out here to give to all the other nice, good things. I'm going to give things that can account for eternity. And I remember being challenged in my own thinking, okay, what am I going to do with the resources I have? Because there's going to be someone showing up at your mailbox or at your door for every cause. You just follow the Lord's leading. I'm not saying you have to cut off, you know, don't give the United Way this year. That's not what I'm saying. But there is a sense in which we have a cause that's overarching, over, above, superior, and we just need to be plugged into that cause. And it's a lot more than just writing our check, okay? I mean, that's a just one little aspect of that. Yes, sir?
There's a tendency amongst brothers.
I'm sorry?
There's a tendency amongst brothers to have a one-upsmanship.
That's true.
In the case of my brother, we've always sort of tried to outdo the other.
Yeah.
And in doing that, we sometimes fail each other. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. I mean, it's brothers can be very competitive and very...
But that doesn't mean brothers in Christ.
No.
It just means biological.
Yes, I got you. Yes, so true.
They can also know each other better than others, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he spoke to David. You know, David was very confident,
mm-hmm.
you know, in God.
Yes, he was.
And he knew that. So it I don't know necessarily it was anything that we, you know, David was a confident person. And
mm-hmm.
brother knew this.
Yeah, yeah.
I know a lot of things about my brother.
Yeah, it is the brother point of view is a unique, very knowledgeable perspective. As it is indeed. Okay, flip your sheet over. Let's get on to the next section. I think you understand what didn't stop him. I have a cause. There is a cause. I mean, shouldn't we be doing this? Okay. Verse 30. And he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And the people answered him as the first one did. And when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. David just going around saying, you know what? Da-da-da. And it gets passed, and finally, you figure now, for 40 days, Saul's been waiting for somebody to say, I'm ready to fight. He's got everybody all riled up, and they're making their chant, and they start on the battlefield until Goliath steps out and starts yelling, and suddenly they turn tail and run. And finally, here's somebody. There's somebody around that's saying he's ready to do something. Go get him. Verse 32, and David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine.
That's a powerful scripture. I watch men lose heart to fight over purity, their wives, their wealth, and the enemies and the devil and the giants that just come barging into life. And many men just shut down. You know, they don't have someone encouraging them. They don't have an accountability partner. They don't have the knowledge or depth of the word. They don't have the tools to fight the enemy. You know, to me, that's what this story is all about. You know, mm-hmm. You'll go fight the giants and mm-hmm. try to invade your life and not to lose heart.
Mm-hmm.
The richer encouraged not to lose heart in doing well. Because I tell you what, you work and give and work and give, and eventually somebody hurts you, you just say, I'm just going to shut down.
Yeah.
I'll show them. I'm not going to give anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, we're encouraged to not lose heart in a lot of areas of our life.
We certainly are.
As men, we're, you know, pick up the stone and fling the slingshot and hope for the best.
Okay, he's been looking for 40 days. Good stuff. He's been looking for 40 days for someone to say he's going to do exactly that. I'm going to go and do. And look at the great man of faith Saul is, 33. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go up against this Philistine and to fight with him. You're but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. Okay, David's had his motives questioned by his brother. Here he's having his ability questioned by the king. And you kind of wonder if David, he didn't say this, but he could have said, you know, Saul, I'm about all you got, okay? I don't see too many other hands going up around the camp. But look how he sort of defends himself. And by the way, we all know that hurts when our abilities or our motives are questioned. You can't do that. Well, you're just doing it for the wrong reason. I mean, he's got both of that in short order by people who should have encouraged him. His own brother should have encouraged him. The king, who's got the real problem here, should have done something. I don't want to defend Saul too much because Saul is just not a very defendable character. But, You know, if you sent for central casting for the perfect person to look like the guy that's going to fight Goliath, David wouldn't have fit the role, okay?
He was just looking at the physical dimensions of it.
Exactly. And we've fallen that same trap. We think it's got to look exactly like this. It's got to be this way and so forth. And I just be on the alert for this. This is a slightly off subject, but be on the alert with this in your life. It's amazing the people that I have seen that God has used to do some amazing things. And when you look at them and their life and their story and their abilities and their liabilities, God seems to delight in using the most, from a human standpoint, the most unlikely people to do things for him.
He's glorified in weakness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your strength is made perfect in weakness, yeah. And then you think about whoever does fit the role from central casting, and whoever does look like the part with all the skills really still doesn't have the ability, because Jesus said, without me you can do nothing. So, but we do lock in, as you said there, Mark, we lock into the outward and that sort of thing. Just be on guard with that.
Yes. It reminds me of a verse that says the weapons of our warfare are not carnal.
They're not carnal, yes.
They're not natural realm.
So here's Saul, the leader appointed by God. He's leaving God out of the equation altogether.
Yes, he totally is. He really is. There's actually an intervening story we skipped. I thought about doing it, but I didn't. Where he was supposed to completely destroy the Amalekites, mm-hmm. and he just doesn't even pay. He doesn't do what God tells him to do. Just act disobedient. What's that?
That's why he got in trouble.
Yes, and that's why David was the guy that's going to follow you.
He actually sinned against God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he seemed to self-justify. You can read it. That's back in what chapter? Chapter 15, I think, maybe 14 and 15, 15 particularly. But anyway, so his ability is now questioned. Notice how he responds, 34. And David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion came or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them."
That tells me he's not 8 years old.
Right.
No, he's not. But he was a person that did believe in the Lord and trusted him. And I think I'd just say, well, you know what? Have a good meal, lion, and hope you don't come back soon. You know, just not, you know, my dad has plenty of lambs, okay? I'm not going to go bite no bear. No. But that's not a shepherd's heart. He goes and defends, and he does. And so he goes back to his past victories. You see, that bear, maybe David would have had cause of, well, why'd you allow a bear to come? Why'd you allow a lion to come? You could have kept the lion and the bear away. Why'd you do that? God was proving himself faithful to David in a very difficult, stressful situation, because he was preparing for him for an even more difficult and stressful situation. I'm sure anyone looking out there would say, okay, we'll give you three choices. Would you like to take on a bear, a lion, or Goliath?
Goliath, well, yeah.
I mean, you know, probably a lot of people would say, well, I'll take my chance with the bear, the lion. I don't know what you might take, but it was not an easy situation, okay? So he recalls his past victories. Sometimes we lose that capacity, don't we? God's done something really special for us, and he's provided for us. No, thank you, Lord. You came through for me. You did whatever it was you did. And then the next time, the giant's out on their horizon making waves. Oh, what are we going to do? We somehow don't connect God's faithfulness, whether through the word, life, his promises, or through our experience, to the next thing.
A lot of it's what we think we did,
yeah,
rather than what God did.
Yeah.
We don't give him the glory for what he does for us.
And that's a good point. We need to just make sure that we close that loop, that we give him credit and praise and thanks and do that. And try to keep our own pride, in place. Okay, so he's killed the bear, he's killed the lion, Now, he makes this phrase in verse 36. This is also key. Just kind of, if you read the story, these moments where it jumps out, where you really see his heart revealed. Verse 36, your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing, here's the reason, because of the fact he has defied the armies of the living God. There's the cause. There's the rallying cry. And David has said that now multiple times. He seems to be just really the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, 37, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. How much confidence do you think Saul had when he said that? What, just speculating.
Not much.
Go ahead. Good luck. God be with you. Be blessed.
He's trying to put God in the equation at the very end.
Yeah. Kind of slap a little God on there and see how that works. Yeah.
Maybe realize, you know, a young man able to defeat a bear and a lion, that's two miracles right there. Most folks wouldn't have a good, because he didn't have a 357 Magnum with him. So.
No. Yeah. Maybe that was very sincere. Maybe God is working in Saul's heart. Maybe that's a very sincere comment. I'll tell you how I viewed it. I guess I just kind of viewed it like, well, go fight the giant. And may God have mercy on your soul. You know, yeah. I mean, it's like, and this is just total speculation. I just kind of think Saul didn't think David was going to come back in one piece.
Yeah, I don't think he was impressed.
But now maybe, I don't argue the point either. Because God is not finished trying to communicate a few things to Saul, too.
There's a Eurasian bear that's supposed to be 200 pounds max.
Okay.
You can't compare it to like what we know as a black bear or a grizzly bear. But still, 200 pounds would be pretty significant.
Yeah, I'd rather keep that one in a cage, yes.
And there were lions.
Yes,
in biblical. The land, they weren't like the African.
Yeah.
This kid was probably 14 years old.
Okay.
And had killed a bear. Goliath means nothing to him. Because in our time, a grizzly, for instance, he stands about that tall.
About the same? Yeah. Go up to Cabela's and look at the stuffed grizzly bear. Yeah, that's an impressive sight.
He's very agile, and they say he can run 40 miles an hour.
I don't think
Goliath
could do that.
And I don't believe that a man can run that fast and that agile. So David had a lot of confidence when he was looking at Goliath and the bear that he supposedly killed.
He knew what he had done.
Yes.
That's where his confidence
came from. So he thought his agility.
These other people didn't know.
Yes.
His brothers were not there in the
right. Saul didn't want to depend on David, but he's pretty much relegated to David only.
Yeah.
No other options.
Yeah. There's no one else. There's no one else that he wants to go. This is all I got.
Jesse, hadn't heard you say that God prepares us for.
He does. Yeah. Let's just think about this. We're just probably going to push the pause button here. We're not going to go much further. We'll pick it up, the actual battle, if you will. But, you know, we talked about how he's challenged by the common thought, the conventional wisdom. Everybody else said, don't go fight Goliath, you get killed. That's what everybody thought. All the army guys thought. That's what Saul thought. He's challenged by his brother, questioning his motives. You're here for the wrong reason. I mean, and by the way, that of all things, most of us, that would, if someone challenges our ability, you think you have the opportunity to prove them wrong, you know? But when someone challenges your motives, you know, I mean, that strikes really at the heart, you know. And then King says, I don't think you can do this. You're going to be, you know, you're just a youth. This guy, from your age to the age of whatever he is now, he's been nothing but trained to be a warrior. And you're just like, you're starting out. You know, he's well into his warrior career. This is day one of boot camp, and you want to go fight the enemy. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. But then you have this, I mean, it comes down to David having to say, as he says back in verse 32, your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. I mean, the biggest obstacle he overcomes, and I don't think it was a big obstacle for David because he was a man that his faith in God was very intact, but the obstacle of faith, you know. Are you going to go forward? Or are you going to turn tail and run? You know, are you going to move forward or not? I think this is the question I have. You know, we've looked at David's challenge, his motives, his abilities, but what was really the source of his courage? And he really just says it this way. The Lord who delivered this, you know, bear lion delivered me. It's the Lord who's going to do this. It's the Lord who's going to do this. And you'll see that more clearly in as the battle ensues. We'll pick it up, Lord willing, here next time. But his faith is what pulled him through. Okay, bring it home. This is just me kind of trying to summarize, get a few thoughts put together. You can add to it or whatever. Just a couple questions, a question and a statement. What is our cause that is worth fighting for? I remember someone challenged me one time. He said, do you ever stop to think of what you're willing to die for? Yeah. Think about that. I mean, there's a lot of things I wouldn't die for. Someone steal my car, here's keys. I mean, I'm going to die for a car. Someone wants to steal my wallet with a gun pointed at me. I'm not going to die for whatever's in my wallet. What if it's your child or your wife or another person? It changes the equation a whole lot. You know, are you willing to give your life for your country and for your cause and for your Lord, obviously, or to put it on the line? You know, it's a very kind of sobering question to ask ourselves. What is our cause? What are we all in for?
And I think of the scripture that says, a good shepherd knows well the condition of his flock. And I look at the professionalism of the ministry and the number of pastors who would never kill themselves to go rescue one of their sheep that are lost. Never knock on their door and say, what are you doing sleeping with your neighbor's wife? Are you nuts? And I'm amazed in the next few scriptures how Saul, you know, got dressed up, you know, David, you know, by Saul, and he goes, this isn't me. I'm not going to try to be something that I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to be me. I'm going to take my gifts and my faith, not your sword, not your armor. You know, we tend to take on the likeness of other people rather than do what God's called us to do, and that's what we fight for. We fight for the gifts that we have and the people that he calls us to protect, and a lot of times it's not. We're misdirected, you know. We're serving markets and people that aren't our calling. It doesn't fit our temperament. Doesn't fit our gifting. It's too much for us. You know, don't think more highly of yourself than you are. Don't take on things that are too difficult for yourself, says Psalm. That's a great story. I've just not read it in years.
I was reading John Piper's sermon last night about Paul.
Okay.
And he said that Paul had a way of journalizing his faith, gain and loss. And he considered everything that he had as loss, but the only thing that was in the gain column was Christ. And I got to thinking about that last night, and I was trying to put myself in that same thought of mine, and it's very difficult. I mean, we all consider our house, our car, our wealth, our bank accounts as a gain, when it's truly not. If we have Christ, it's a gain.
Yeah.
And all that other stuff on the other side is a loss. Mm. If we truly believe in Christ.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, I don't think a lot of people in today's world, I mean, with all this going on, you know, that we all know about, understand that Christians believe that God is God.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what you say. You've got to talk Jesus and tell him God is God. I don't care if I get a tax deduction. That's your... nowhere in the Bible does it say I get a tax deduction for worshiping God. There's no place. Jesus did not perform a wedding. God is still God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to firmly tell these people that.
Mm-hmm.
You can believe the way you want, but God is God, and that's who I answer to. I don't answer your face.
Yeah. And it's well said. You know, our allegiance is much higher than, Yeah, I mean, I'd prefer to keep our tax-exempt status, but if we lose our tax-exempt status, what's the church going to do? Pay your taxes so and just keep doing what we've always needed to do. Might have to tighten our belts up a little bit, but just do it. Yeah. We just do what God's called us to do. That's the key. And I think that's David. This is what God wants. We're the armies of the living God. What are you doing, people? Bottom line, this is try this on. A man of God on a mission from God, trusting in God, will be victorious in life's battles. I think that's true. It doesn't mean every moment's going to be all fun and games. I don't think David expected he was going to be on the run from Saul for several years. But he was. But ultimately, big picture, we're talking about him 3,000 years later. So, still the hero that needs to be. Yes, sir. Yeah, the last word, my friend.
Eliab recognized David's indomitable spirit, but he didn't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think he understood its source, because that wasn't his source. He was trying to gin up his own human courage, and it wasn't working real well. David was operating from another source. That's the source we need to tap into. Thank you, guys. Have a great, great evening, okay?
Thank you.